Welcome back to this week's DBM Strategy Call Part 1, folks. I feel like we just lived through a month worth of history in a momentous 5-day week. The headline everyone's talking about is the U.S.-Iran 14-point Memorandum of Understanding. It's an official extension of the ceasefire. Lebanon is included, and the Strait of Hormuz is getting back to normality.
It was quite a week in global politics, that's for sure. And as we know, the reality of what is happening is so much more than the media headlines.
Absolutely. The theatrics are on full volume, with the immediate economic fallout seeing equities catch a bid and oil prices coming back in line. WTI went from $81 at Monday's open to $76 by Thursday's close. Trump is out there blasting critics on Truth Social, calling anyone who thinks he's too soft on Tehran jealous or stupid. But let's be real, the terms of the MOU are incredibly convenient. Some might say planned, as Iran gets an immediate resumption of oil exports, a $300 billion reconstruction plan, and U.S. sanctions dismantled, all in exchange for an enrichment freeze and reopening the strait.
Right, and this brings us to why this is really happening. There is one theory that we have just witnessed a massive structural shift, up there with the original Versailles Treaty over 100 years ago, or the so-called Suez Crisis that signaled the end of the British Empire. We are witnessing a historic inversion between the military-industrial complex, MIC, and the financial-industrial complex, FIC, that could well be seen in history as the change of the guard as the U.S. Empire gives way to a multipolar world order.
Wow, that sounds profound. Break that down for us, because this has really flipped the script on traditional foreign policy thinking and how we structure our digital businesses under new global structures.
Indeed, for decades, the MIC drove Western foreign policy. Forever wars, defense contracts, and regional instability kept the machine fed and debt as the engine. Israel was the ultimate unsinkable aircraft carrier for that paradigm in the Middle East, but it now seems that Israel is effectively being sidelined because the FIC, the power of Western capital, global supply chains, and debt management, has decided that endless kinetic warfare is actively destroying the global financial system.
Ah, so the FIC stepped in and said, enough. Kinetic war is blowing up our balance sheets, causing sticky inflation. We need stabilization.
Exactly. The peace deal, even with its signal virtuing and Versailles pomp, isn't a sign of sudden altruism. It's the FIC asserting dominance over the MIC. The Western financial elite needed a deflationary shock to save the bond market, forcing a ceasefire, bringing Iranian oil back online to crush energy costs, and sidelining the regional actors who benefit from perpetual escalation is a pure FIC chess move. This is the week the financial complex told the military complex that stability is better for the bottom line. Although, don't for one second think a payoff for the MIC is not part of the deal. After all, hot wars are much more profitable than pure defense contracts will ever be.
Interesting. And while the FIC was rewriting global order, a layer down at the macro level, we saw the first signs of the Warsh regime change at the Federal Reserve on Wednesday. Kevin Warsh made his debut as Fed chair, and man, he chose a hard line that made the market sit up, at least for now.
He really did. The FOMC held rates steady as everyone expected, but the dot plot sent a lightning bolt through trading desks. 9 of 18 officials now project at least one hike by the end of 2026, and 6 of those are forecasting 2 or more 25 basis point increases.
And the ultimate power move? Warsh didn't even submit his own dot.
Classic Warsh. He's always hated the dot plot as a communication tool. He basically came out and said, price stability is our North Star. Our commitment to 2% inflation is strong, unanimous, and unambiguous. When reporters pushed for their usual forward guidance, he bluntly told them, I can't give you any guidance on what we're going to do next.
On that, the market threw a temper tantrum on Wednesday. The S&P fell 1.21%, the NASDAQ dropped 1.34%, Bitcoin pulled back, the Dow lost 507 points, and the 2-year yield spiked 16 basis points. Warsh basically told Wall Street, I am not your friend, and the Fed put is dead. He's even launching 5 separate task forces to completely overhaul how the Fed handles communications, data, and its balance sheet. It's almost like they are trying to amplify a death rattle as the Fed scrambles for relevance.
But here's the real irony, John. The peace deal that tanked oil might make Warsh's hawkish dot plot completely irrelevant anyway. If oil sits in that $73 to $77 range through the end of June, the June CPI report dropping in mid-July could print as low as 2.5 to 3%. That would be a stunning drop from May's ugly 4.2%.
And that's why the markets bounced back so hard by Friday. Investors realized that cheaper oil matters way more than a tough-talking Fed. Plus, Trump dropped massive news that Apple is partnering with Intel to build chips domestically. Intel surged over 10%, and the Philly Semiconductor Index hit an all-time record high. By Friday's close, all main market indices wrapped up the week green.
Okay. Now let's pivot to the plumbing of the digital asset space and the ongoing stablecoin versus CBDC narrative across two continents. While the macro world was watching oil and the Fed theatrics, a silent war is escalating over the future of programmable money, specifically private stablecoins versus central bank digital currencies.
This is getting spicy, especially when you contrast the US and Europe right now. In the US, the momentum has firmly shifted towards private stablecoins. The political appetite for a US Federal Reserve CBDC is practically sub-zero right now. The legislative push behind the Clarity Act, even though it's currently stuck in Senate recess limbo, shows that Washington prefers heavily regulated, bank-issued, dollar-backed stablecoins. Why? Because US dollar stablecoins export US dollar hegemony globally. They buy billions in T-bills, backing up U.S. national debt for years to come and kicking the fiat can.
Meanwhile, across the pond, Europe is singing a totally different tune as they recognize the threat of U.S. dollar stablecoins. Even though we all know the euro has been subjugated to the U.S. dollar for decades, it's this that tells us there is much more to the eurozone's stance on installing CBDCs than defending Europeans from the dollar itself.
Exactly. Europe is aggressively moving forward with the digital euro prep phase. The eurozone is terrified of MiCA regulations squeezing out non-compliant foreign stablecoins. But instead of fostering a vibrant private market, the ECB wants tight centralized control, of course. They view a CBDC as a tool for monetary sovereignty, while the US market views private stablecoins as the commercial engine of internet commerce. It's a classic clash of philosophies, American capitalistic fragmentation versus European centralized technocracy. We will watch this standoff closely into the remainder of 2026, while at the same time distancing ourselves from 100% reliance on bosses, banks, and governments hell-bent on control of the people via fiscal tools.
On that note, now let's talk Bitcoin. How is all this geopolitics and macro positioning influencing true sound money? Well, with all this wild macro news, oil collapsing, stocks hitting records, a peace deal placing us on the verge of a new world order, and the nanny state EU, BTC has just been, well, chillin'. It's sitting in a tight $60,000 to $65,000 range.
Yeah, it barely registered the Iran peace deal, even with that brutal 13-session ETF outflow streak finally ending. We expect another massive wave of inflows to return at some point, as between Warsh threatening rate hikes and the Clarity Act waiting on the Senate, BTC is looking for its next big spark. Either that Senate floor vote on crypto regulation or the expected oil collapse, or both, will completely flip the inflation narrative over the next month or so.
And on top of this, we also have the secular, structural bullish news from Asia. This flew under the radar for a lot of mainstream media this week, but Japan's National Business Corporate Pension Fund, which manages a massive 21.3 billion yen, announced they are officially allocating 1% of their assets to crypto by the end of fiscal year 2026. Right on cue as the long-standing Japan carry trade draws to a close and cheap yen finally vanishes from the world stage.
Wow. A conservative Japanese national pension fund? What was their thesis?
They cited a 6-year internal study explicitly concluding that they need Bitcoin as a structural hedge against fiat currency debasement. Think about the gravity of that. This isn't a hedge fund looking for 6x gains. This is sovereign adjacent retirement capital realizing that the long-term math of fiat survival doesn't work out. The takeaway, when institutions with multi-decade horizons like Japanese pension funds or 401ks or the NHS pension scheme shift 1% of their portfolio into digital assets to protect against debasement, the retail chop between 60K and 65K Bitcoin becomes a rounding error, let alone as other fixed income vehicles come to the same conclusion in coming months and years. The structural floor is rising, providing us private holders more and more incentive to DCA Bitcoin and push through the FUD.
Looking ahead to next week, we've got Micron and FedEx earnings, Q1 GDP revisions, and May PCE data. PCE is going to be the big one, since Warsh is laser-focused on stated inflation. If the market can look past a sticky May PCE and start pricing in that massive oil-driven disinflation coming in June, equities and crypto could really start to run once again, this time on a fresh market base as the OGs have sold out and the uninformed retail players of 2025 have been shaken out.
Okay, that's it for this week's DBM Strategy Part 1 breakdown, folks. We'll see you in this week's DBM Strategy Part 2 as we update the community on our flywheel model, our core projects, and ongoing liquidity events. The timing may just be on our side as we strategize to intercept this next wave of Bitcoin growth and continue our journey to self-determination and self-sovereignty as the powers that be continue to impose digital fiat onto mass populations, still none the wiser as to why their currency keeps buying them less and less each year. See the show notes to access this week's DBM Strategy Part 2 to ensure you are well prepared to capitalize on the work you have put in to stand apart from the masses in recent years. See you there, and see you next time.